Moncrief on News Talk.
The term digital nomad conjures up quite a romantic image. To work, all you need is your laptop so you can roam the world and still make an income. But is it all it's cracked up to be? The journalist Emily Bratt has spoken to many such nomads and did it herself for a few years. Emily, good afternoon.
Hi there.
Is there a typical, if you like, profile of a digital nomad? Do they tend to be maybe in their 20s, for instance?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a stereotype, actually. I mean, I met people from all ages, all walks of life, really.
Yeah.
And just need a laptop.
Okay. And what kind of work did they do on their laptops?
Well, it was a mix. Again, it's a mix of things. I mean, a lot of people had remote jobs, so they were actually working for organisations, but remotely. And then there was people like me who, I was a freelance writer, so I had different clients, basically, and I worked my own hours. But some people were still working set hours.
Okay, but you were a copywriter.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and so not being anywhere near your client, or you know, in the UK, that didn't disadvantage you at all from doing that work.
I mean, occasionally it did with some things I was working on, but they all knew that I wasn't in the UK at the time. I was honest about that, so that it never really was that much of a problem.
Yeah. Okay. I just mean from the point of view that not that they wouldn't like it, but that you know, if you're writing copy for, I don't know, beans or something that you couldn't get because you're in Malaysia, then that might disadvantage you about finding out more about the thing you're writing about.
Oh, well, I didn't do much product copywriting, to be honest.
Okay, all right. I know. That was like a wild example I was trying to use. But that wasn't a difficulty for you, no?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I just think technology is such these days that, you know, if I wanted to hop on a call with somebody to clarify something, it was really easy. So, yeah, it was fine. And you can just have chats as and when. And, I don't feel like it hindered me, really.
Yeah. So, and going back to the stereotype notion of a digital nomad, it is they're in their maybe 20s, early 30s. And then eventually they think, well, you know, I'm going to kind of grow up now and go home do all the boring things. So were you meeting people? Did you talk to people who were much older than that, who were still living this lifestyle?
I did, yeah. I mean, it was a little different for me because for the first part, I was sort of immersed in an expat world because my brother lived in Vietnam. And so he had a lot of expat friends. So they were all ages. But then I suppose in Bali, again, it was all ages. I mean, people think it's a lot of young people, but I met people who'd made lives there. They'd actually settled down there, people 35, 40 plus. So again, yeah, I didn't see that it was just young people, really.
Okay. So, but would those people, though, maybe more accurately, be, if they'd settled down in countries, they're more accurately described as migrants, really, rather than nomads, in that they're not going from country to country?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there was that. But then also, you know, lots of countries are offering digital nomad visas now. So there were some people I met, for example, who had, I can't remember exactly how long different visas are, but for example, there were some that were like a year long. And so I know there was a couple I knew in Bali, actually, who were working out there and renting a place out there that they'd signed like a 1 year lease on a place, for example. So, lots of different types of lifestyles. I wasn't doing that. I was just there quite transiently.
And have you spoken to anyone, or did you meet anyone who maybe admitted it might be a bit lonely because you're going to a place you don't know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think personally, this is why I've come back, grass is always greener, isn't it? And, you know, that's not, I had loads of fun. I really enjoyed it. I was also quite conscious of over tourism as well, which I found tricky in some places, what with things I observed. I mean, I was lucky because I went to places where I knew a lot of people. So I knew I was living with my brother for a bit, and then I had friends in Australia, which is where I based myself for a bit. But I do know lots of other digital nomads who've literally just set out and alone to countries where they know nobody, they've never been before, And personally, I think that's very brave. But so I didn't do that.
Yes.
But even so, yes, I think it was sometimes a bit lonely, especially when, for example, when I was in Sydney, I realised that, you know, I was just a transient person there. And even though I had my friends, they were going about their lives. You know, they were working their 9-to-5s and they had stuff planned. And then I knew that I would be leaving in a month or however long it was. And so it did feel like a bit, I couldn't completely slot into their lives, basically, I suppose.
Yeah. I suppose because the rhythm of your life was completely different to the rhythm of their lives.
Yeah, although I did try and, you know, I've made my hours 9-to-5, basically, in whichever country I was in, to slot in. but yes, I think it's more just knowing that there's an end point. That's the thing I found hardest, and I think that's where the loneliness came from.
Ah, yeah, that is interesting. But I suppose you must have met people who were perfectly happy with there not being an end point.
I think if I did, they weren't talking about it, and I think that's kind of what I was alluding to in the article. I think a lot of people are. I mean, I don't want to speak for everybody, of course, but some of the people I met, I think maybe were just, you know, living in the now and not thinking about when things come to an end, which sort of I subscribe to that way of thinking too at times. But I'm wondering if people were kind of making up for it with, you know, a bit of hedonism here and there.
It was neatly leading me into what I was going to ask you. Is it kind of hedonistic? Because would a lot of nomads feel like you're on perpetual, even though you're working, you have to make an income, but you're kind of on perpetual holiday?
Well, I do, yeah. I mean, it depends where you are. Obviously, when I was in Australia, that was more kind of, I was sort of living a more normal, grounded life. But places like Bali and Vietnam, to an extent, certain parts of Vietnam where it was very touristy and beach bars and that kind of thing.
Mm.
It was a lot of, it was hard to marry the fact that I had a job and work to do with what was going on around me, you know. Like I think I said in the article, I just wanted to go outside and play. I didn't want to be sitting in a cafe working.
Yeah. Were there, and in terms of the practicalities of getting paid and paying tax and all those kinds of things, were they difficult or easier?
Well, I mean, that's a whole can of worms. It was fine. I mean, I only ever worked for UK organisations, and I wasn't like away for, you know, a really long period of time. I think my longest stint was what was meant to be 4 months became 7. And yeah, so you know, I'm a UK taxpayer and I was being paid in pounds into my UK bank account, so that wasn't an issue.
When you eventually went home and then settled down, was that a difficult transition?
Yes, definitely. I feel fine now. I've been home about a year now. But initially, because I'd lived quite a nomadic life for about 3 years in the UK and abroad, so I used to pet sit in different places, different parts of the UK. And so when I came back, I still did a few more pet sits, and I also lived on and off at my family home. And I thought, you know, what am I doing? I need to have a base. So, yes, it was difficult because I felt like I was still living some transient life and I couldn't really talk to friends about stuff because their lives were so different. And you did felt like a bit of an anomaly, perhaps. And yeah, so it was hard. But what's helped me, definitely, and it's not something I ever thought would help me, is having a base and signing a lease on a flat, starting a job that has set hours, going back to what I thought was really boring, you know?
Yeah, there you go. You're so boring now, Emily.
Right?
Tell us about pet sitting. Is that a thing? Do people can people make a full-time job out of that?
Well, I tell you, I didn't believe it was a thing about 4 years ago. I thought it was a scam, to be honest. It turns out it's not a scam. You can pet sit, and it's not so. The way I did it was through an organisation called Trusted House Sitters, and the idea behind it is that no money exchanges hands, so it's not a paid gig, it's not a job. you're just exchanging services. So, yeah, I mean, depending, I mean, I was told that I was an ideal demographic because I was a woman in my 30s. And so maybe that makes me really trustworthy. I don't know. But that's what one of the owners said. So I didn't find it difficult to find places.
Okay, but you got to live in very nice houses and just kind of look after their cats and that kind of thing.
Yeah, literally that. Yeah.
That's lovely.
It was great. It was lovely, but it was also a bit lonely.
I would imagine so. And would it be like one cat or you know, would it, you know, you have to go and pet sit for someone's half a dozen dachshunds kind of thing?
Well, I choose what I did. But I mean, one time I looked after a field of sheep, some ponies, a dog and a cat.
That's farming, Emily.
Farm.
That's not...
Yeah. I was a glorified shepherd. I had no shepherding qualifications either, I want to add, but they still accepted me. So, that seemed to work. I actually loved it. I loved doing that.
Okay.
But yeah, anything.
Anything. Gosh, that's fascinating. Emily, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was the journalist Emily Brath there. That piece is it that she wrote about being a digital nomad is in The Guardian. Someone says, tropical climate, not too many people to talk to. I can't see the downside, to be honest. Well, yeah, yes, if you're that way inclined. But I would imagine even if you, you know, really love your own company, after a while you might want to talk to somebody. Surely it's a disaster to be working Irish hours in Fiji or New Zealand. How do they manage that? Yeah, that is, I imagine, a difficulty. Now, with Emily, she just had work to do and she could do it at any time she wanted to rather than she was kind of clocking in remotely. But if you are on the other side of the world, clocking in remotely to someplace in this side of the world, yeah, you can see how that would be hard. I met a Russian guy in Malaysia last year who'd been travelling for 17 years. He seemed happy with it, but also somewhat detached from reality or community or something. I couldn't do it, says Tom. Tom put travelling in inverted commas there. Are you sure he was travelling or just... on the run. I've always thought the digital nomad thing was nonsense as this person. I think people equate being on holiday with living somewhere. And there are any number of places you'd love to go on holidays, but would actually hate to live in. Well, indeed. But I suppose the beauty of it is that you can kind of test that theory out. And then after a few months, if you don't like it, just go someplace else.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.